Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, August 15th. I'm Lisa Music, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, updates on the Boise and Hill fires in Humboldt County, and housing support organizations express gratitude for community support. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. One Humboldt County fire has been fully contained, while another has grown to be the state's fourth largest active fire. Lauren Schmidt reports.
In less than a week's time, the Boise Fire, southeast of Orleans, has now grown to over 10,000 acres as of this Thursday afternoon. Firefighters continue to secure containment lines around Orleans. According to the Forest Service, last night was quiet on the fire line, allowing night shift crews to make significant progress in mopping up and improving containment lines around key areas, including Orleans, Perch Creek, Red Cap Road, Le Perron Flat, and Short Ranch. Crews are focused on removing snags and vegetation near the lines to ensure they remain secure. Today, two additional divisions have been deployed to the east side of the fire. These teams will work to reopen lines from Orleans Mountain Road and extend their efforts onto High Point Ridge via Nordheimer Trail. Here was this morning's operational briefing.
Good morning, Mike Anderson, operations trainee with Team 10. Morning update for the Boise incident. Starting over in Division Echo.
In the northern portion, closest to Orleans.
Today, the division at drop point 12 where firing came down yesterday is going to continue to hold and mop up last night's firing operation coming down into drop point 9 down here. In Echo today, the goal is to maintain, hold, and mop up what was fired on last night's shift. Moving over into Lima.
The northeastern portion of the fire.
Today, the guys are going to go in and start constructing line at the Echo Lima Division break on Orleans Mountain, which is right here coming over down into Nordheimer Flat. Moving down into Division Romeo.
The eastern portion of the Boise Fire.
They're going to go ahead and pick up Nordheimer Trail and start constructing line on Nordheimer Trail going up High Point Ridge, bringing it over to Division Tango. Division Tango is going to pick up the hand line on Nordheimer Ridge and bring it down, bringing it back towards Division Romeo. Today, Division Union will be an unstaffed division. Moving over to Division Yankee.
Where the fire meets the Humboldt, Siskiyou, and Trinity County border.
They're going to do some prep on the south end of Division Yankee down at the bottom here. Fire is coming down to the 03 road. They're going to get prep done on the south end as with their holding line, and they're going to fire out as necessary to keep the fire contained between the 03 and their holding line down there. Moving over into Division Alpha.
The western portion of the fire.
Division Alpha, they're going to be continuing between the division breaks, holding, mopping up, and containing the firing operation from 2 days ago. They're also going to be going in and continue scouting for any structure assessment and structure protection needs in the town of Orleans. And that is the plan for the day operations for the Boise Fire today.
As of news time, the Boise Fire is 10,200 acres. Containment remains at 0%. A total of 816 personnel are on the ground working to keep the fire's footprint as small as possible. Fixed-wing aircraft is available as needed. Firefighters took advantage of today's favorable conditions to continue their hard work, although opportunities for containment in certain areas remain limited. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. The Humboldt and Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office issued additional evacuation warnings earlier this week. You can see the official map of evacuation orders and warnings at protect.genesis.com. For public safety purposes, area near the fire within the Six Rivers National Forest have been closed. South of this incident, the Hill Fire near Willow Creek is now 100% contained, after growing to 7,724 acres. The U.S. Forest Service issued the following press release, quote, "Today is the last day the Hill Fire will be managed under Type 3 North Coast Interagency Incident Management Team. As of 6 a.m. August 15, 2024, the Hill Fire has transitioned to a Type 4 incident that will be managed by local staff from the Lower Trinity Ranger District. Approximately 100 personnel remain assigned and will continue to mop up remaining heat sources and patrol the fire until all smoke and heat are extinguished. Heavy equipment operators continue to work alongside resource advisors to restore damaged terrain from fire suppression activities, improve drainage systems, and facilitate the forest recovery and regeneration. Repair work is currently focused along Amon Ridge. Once completed, repair work will then be focused on Hennessy Ridge. Unburned islands in the interior of the Hill Fire perimeter will continue to burn and smolder, which may produce visible smoke. The fire is expected to remain within its current footprint, east of Route 1, south of Campbell Creek, west of South Fork Trinity River, and north of Cow Creek," end quote. Again, the Hill Fire is now 100% contained. You can see photos from the fire line on the KMUD News Facebook page. An unseasonably wet low-pressure system is expected to arrive on the northern part of the Redwood Coast this weekend. Rainfall is anticipated from Friday night at 11 p.m. through Saturday afternoon at 5 p.m., areas from Shelter Cove to Crescent City and as far east as Ruth to Trinity Center will likely see precipitation. While this moisture could assist in fire suppression efforts, it also brings the risk of new starts due to potential lightning activity. For more details, we turn to the National Weather Service in Eureka.
Hi, everybody. This is Sahira Velez, meteorologist at the National Weather Service, Eureka. So the condition for today has been like pretty calm. We have some cumulus across the interior and some smoke from the Boise Fire spreading east toward the northern portion of Trinity this afternoon. We're expecting stratus developing near shore again tonight, but these will be very fragmented, and these will diminish during the day. Tomorrow, it will clear out. Tomorrow, we are expecting, again, inland high temperatures in the mid-80s to around 90s across the interior. Coastal temperature will be pretty similar like today in the mid-60s. But for tomorrow, we are expecting that the humidity across the interior continue increasing, so that will diminish a little bit the potential for any fire development, since like it's cool down. They will continue to see some breezy probably, but for the northern part, for the forecast area, winds it will not be strong as we are seeing in the southern portion of the forecast area, like Mendocino and Lake County this afternoon. But as I mentioned, condition will like diminish in fire threat for the area. But we look forward for the Friday night into Saturday, there is a upper level low that will approach the area. This will bring some rain, mostly for the northern portion of the area. The thing with this system is the instability will be increasing over the area. It will be cold air, and it will probably bring some potential for a thunderstorm over the northern portion of the area. This includes Humboldt, Trinity, and Del Norte at this moment. But we'll continue looking into that and evaluating. Models are being in a little bit disagree in the position of this low. These showers probably will propagate a little bit south for the northern portion of Mendocino. But this is something that we are going to continue looking. But at this point, rain is expected for Saturday for Humboldt, Del Norte, and areas in Trinity County for Saturday.
Saturday's rain will likely reach the Boise Fire and aid in suppression.
Yes, it will be pretty helpful with the increasing in moisture over the area. So that probably it will help to suppress something of that fire on Saturday. It will be pretty moist for the area.
It also brings a risk of starting other fires due to the potential for lightning.
Yeah, so the thing will be, these lightnings, if that happens, seems like it doesn't look like dry. It will be like some wet conditions. So it will increase, as I mentioned, the humidity over the area, so suppressing or diminishing the threat for fire. But it's pretty dry across the interior. So it's something that we will continue to look into that over the next few days.
For an up-to-the-minute weather forecast, you can visit weather.gov/EKA. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
The city of Eureka has recently been awarded a pro-housing grant. For details on the grant, KMA News turned to a representative from Eureka.
Hi, my name is Jeff Davis. I work with the city of Eureka as a special projects manager. And I oversee the CAPE and Uplift Eureka programs. Recently, the city of Eureka received the pro-housing designation, and that enabled us to apply for the pro-housing incentive program, which there's funds available statewide to use towards a number of different programs. The city of Eureka applied and received over $630,000 to use for rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention here in our community.
When asked to explain the services the Uplift program provides, Davis said,
"Yeah, Uplift Eureka is a program that was designed and developed, implemented back in 2018. It's a program that connects community members that are experiencing homelessness with vital community resources and services. We have several different components. We have an outreach program. We have several different employment programs, like the job skills training program, which is a workforce development program. We also have the Pathway to Payday, which is a great program. It's actually coming up here next week. We do these every 3 months or so. And it's a 4-day job workshop series where folks can come down. The first day, we do a lot of trainings, a lot of work groups, seminars, a lot of information. The second day, we do mock interviews. And then the third day is the day of real interviews. It's almost like speed dating. You sit down for 15 minutes at a time, and one person could knock out maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 interviews in one afternoon. And then the fourth day is kind of keeping the momentum going, the follow-ups, the follow-throughs. This program's been going on for, close to 10 years now, I think 9 years. It has it's a very successful program. We've been able to connect with folks with not just jobs, but careers and career paths. And like I said, the next one is coming up. It's actually next week, the week of August 19th. I think there are room for participants, but also there's definitely room for businesses. We usually try to get about 10 to 12 businesses. And so if there is anyone out there that has any job openings, if you'd like to interview any candidates, reaching out to Sierra Wood at 707-672-2253, and she would be able to help set you up and save you a spot here at Pathway to Payday for next week. The businesses would just come down on Wednesday the 21st for, I believe it's 2 to 3 hours, starting at, I think it's 9:30. But Sierra has all the details for that. And so that's, we have a few different employment programs. And then I think in 2019, we received our first grant to implement our rapid rehousing program. And since then, we've been able to house over 200 folks here in the community. That's, men, women, children, families. It's been, very successful there too. We've been helping the folks that have the highest need. This was all started through grants. I think we've been able to secure think maybe six grants over the last several years. And yeah, this Pearl Housing Incentive Program is the latest one. We're really excited because not just, you know, the rapid rehousing is you know, received more funding, but now we're going to be able to, for the first time, launch a homelessness prevention program. So if folks are at imminent risk of experiencing homelessness, and they meet certain income requirements, we would be able to kind of step in, work with the landlords, and prevent those families or individuals from experiencing homelessness.
Though Davis was not part of the team that secured the Pro Housing designation for the city of Eureka, he shared what the Pro Housing designation means.
I know it was a lengthy process, and it's really, you know, these communities that receive this designation, it requires a strong, demonstrated commitment to breaking down barriers to much needed housing production. And so Development Services Department, Director Kenyon, did an amazing job of getting that all together and submitting that and really kind of showing what, you know, what the city has been doing and the new steps the city is going to be doing to do that. Out of the entire state, I think there's around 40 communities out of all the cities and counties that have received this Pro Housing designation. It's something that the city has, you know, really worked hard towards, and we really do want to provide as much housing as possible for folks and be in compliance with all the state regulations.
The recent grant award was made possible due to the Pro Housing designation. Davis shared what the city is hoping to achieve with the grant funding.
So we were able to, you know, the amount of money that you can apply for is based on your population and then also your housing score. And so for different cities, there are different limits. And so for the city of Eureka, I think the max we could have been awarded was $640,000. That's what we applied for, and we received the $630,000. So that was a very successful grant application. And so most of this is going to be going towards rapid rehousing rental assistance. So that would, you know, we would be able to provide funding for applications for rent, for deposits, for utilities and essential household items for folks. I think over $275,000 is that. So almost half of the grant is just for that. And then $170,000 for staffing. And so this is for over 2 years. So this is the staff that goes out, not just, you know, searches and secures for that housing, but then also goes and, you know, we're following the housing first principles. So we provide those supportive services and those stabilization services. It might take up to 2 years for some of these folks or some of these families to really stabilize, to be secure. And then we really are invested in the long-term success of these of our clients, of our participants. There is also some funds going towards the homelessness prevention program. Like I said, the first time that the city has been able to secure funds and be able to implement this program, we're really excited about that. You know, not a single dollar from this grant is going towards admin. It's all of this, 100% of the funds are going towards the program and going towards staffing.
Though the city has been awarded the funding, additional work will need to be done before funds can be allocated to those that need it the most.
That's a great question. So right now, even though we've been awarded this money, we haven't executed the service agreement with the state. So I'm hoping probably in the next month or so to be able to execute that agreement so we can actually start, you know, utilizing these funds that have been awarded. So we have a website, it's upliftEureka.com. You can go there and there's it shows all of the programs that we currently operate. And then there's a housing assistance link. And so you can go there and click on that. For the rapid rehousing, it's based on need. So it's not first come, first serve, it's based on need. So there's, you know, currently through the county's the continuums of care, there's a coordinated entry system. There's over 900 folks that are signed up that are looking for assistance. And so we pull from that list and we try to assess the vulnerability and the need. And we try to choose the folks that have the highest need off of that list. If you're interested with that or with our prevention program, like I said, that link will, the link on our UpliftEureka.com website, hopefully in the next month or so, once we've secured the funding, once we've executed all the contracts and all of that, we'll be ready to go live with that. We have fantastic staff here at Uplift Eureka. Jeremy Howard is our housing coordinator. If you have any questions about our rapid rehousing program, you can call him at 707-499-4000. 1343. Like I said, those funds aren't available right now. They should be in the near future. And we will advertise this once the prevention program's up and going and once these funds have been secured. You know, we will get the word out.
Davis also expressed his gratitude for being supported in the work Uplift Eureka is doing within the community.
I just want to say, you know, we have a really great staff here at Uplift Eureka, and you know, it's really great to be supported also by city leadership and the elected officials here. And then also, over the years, we could not have accomplished what we have. We could not have made the positive impact that we have had without all of our community partners. Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services has been a huge supporter, and we've collaborated very closely with them. And I just can't thank them enough for all of their help and all of their efforts. You know, the Betty Kwan Chin Homeless Foundation is another a wonderful community partner that's providing a lot of services for folks here in our community. You know, there's St. Vincent de Paul, the Rescue Mission. There's really so many organizations here that are working together. We have the same goal. We're helping the same folks. And so I just really want to, you know, a huge shout out to all of our community partners and everyone, all the links in the chain that make this sort of work possible.
Another local housing organization, AHA, Affordable Homeless Housing Alternatives, is also grateful for community support and planning a celebration this weekend to honor donors and supporters that have been integral to the organization's success.
It's just an opportunity to honor all those folks that have supported AHA from our beginning, and this is like a 10-year anniversary for us. So we've invited volunteers, donors, community supporters, the foundations from whom we've been able to obtain grants or awards. And it's just an evening to have a good time. We're going to have DJ Goldilocks spinning for us. And it's just really casual that we're going to take a little time to maybe do a little bit of history of AHA.
That was Nezzy Wade, AHA president. Wade shared some of AHA's history with KMA News and how the nonprofit got its start.
Well, I've been giving this some thought lately, but we've been really busy. It's a busy life with AHA. We started out very early as an outgrowth of the Occupy movement, where some of us had already been working together, but we're working diligently with folks that were unhoused because Occupy became the public face of Occupy. Became homelessness because it was a safe, inclusive place. We were doing celebrations of determination on Friday, Jim Paquin, another co-founder of AHA, and I, and feeding people and getting to know them and finding out, you know, what was not available in terms of any kinds of services and support, shelter. And then Jim started putting together some documents, and we were adding to that to show the big gap between the actual number of physical beds we had and the number of unhoused people we had, and that what we were doing was not working. So we tried some other ideas, and Jim and Deborah and Kathy Anderson went up to Opportunity Village in Eugene in 2013, met with Andrew Heben and took a little tour, and they were convinced that we were on target with creating the options or the models that Argonne was using and bringing them to Humboldt. So that set us about really having conversations with people outside. And we had community conversations for 2.5 years with people who were living outside. This was before they pushed people out of the Palco Marsh and Eureka, but what kind of opportunities would they be able to enjoy and participate in and be part of and feel, you know, empowered to create community and a stable living place. And so we continued to work with them on safe sheltering through legitimate campgrounds, through tiny house villages. A lot of people who were living in vehicles, maybe not as many at that time as there are today, but a lot of people living in vehicles who had no place to go. So we really tried to come up with some alternatives, and that's basically been our operating mode since.
The celebration is set to take place at the Humboldt Universal Fellowship Hall in Bayside this Saturday.
We're just really grateful that we're part of a really caring community and that we've been well received, and that the people who have supported us obviously believe similarly that everyone has a human right to a safe place to be. And that's what we've been working on. And we've been in the interim trying to take care of people's needs and bring the amenities of home to them, even though they don't have a home, through our direct services and stuff. So we're going to continue to do that as long as we can. And if you would like to be part of it, please contact us. If you are part of it, just know how much we appreciate everything that you do for us.
In an email invitation to donors and supporters, AHA stated that the organization would not have accomplished all that they have without community and organizational support, as well as the generous contributions made towards moving AHA forward in their mission to provide direct services and safe places for their unhoused neighbors in Humboldt. The celebration event is set to take place on Saturday from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. In state news, the San Francisco Public Defender's Office said this week that the city's district attorney should drop charges against 26 protesters who took over the Golden Gate Bridge in April to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. KPFA's Eun Chan reports.
According to San Francisco District Attorney Brooke Jenkins, the protesters that took over the Golden Gate Bridge earlier this year were charged with felony conspiracy, false imprisonment, trespassing, obstruction of a thoroughfare, unlawful assembly, refusal to disperse at a riot, and failure to obey a lawful police order. Nuha Abu Samra is a deputy public defender from the San Francisco Public Defender's Office. She's representing one of the protesters. She says the decision by Jenkins to charge protesters with multiple felonies will intimidate people from asserting their right to protest.
We're seeing harsher punishment. We're seeing overcharging, overcriminalizing. We're seeing people that are protesting a genocide face harsher consequences. And by charging anti-war protesters with dozens of felonies, the DA, Brooke Jenkins, is weaponizing the law against people of conscience who are demanding an end to the ongoing displacement and killings of thousands of innocent children and adults in Gaza.
Jeff Wozniak is one of the attorneys representing the protesters. He says Jenkins' decision is politically motivated and that these prosecutions are a waste of county resources.
The legal process with the felonies will require dramatically more resources from the county, more tax dollars spent on these unnecessary prosecutions. The misdemeanor cases will likewise utilize a lot of resources unnecessarily. We're going to file motions, we're going to fight these cases, and we're going to get this case dismissed.
Ryan Cogesta is a criminal prosecutor and a candidate running against Jenkins for San Francisco District Attorney. He says he doesn't think the charges will hold up in court because otherwise the DA's office wouldn't have dropped dissimilar charges against protesters who blocked traffic and called for a ceasefire on the Bay Bridge during the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation or APEC summit last November.
You know, there's a reason why Jenkins' administration agreed to diversion for the Bay Bridge protests. They had to have understood that they couldn't prove false imprisonment for protesting. I don't think there's ever been precedent for that before. And so in this case, I think something similar may happen where the publicity and the media attention is on the charges, but then the reality in court is a different nature.
Abu Samra from the Public Defender's Office says no protesters are incarcerated as of now, but due to the amount of charges that the DA's office has pressed, they are facing a very serious risk of jail time. And she says if the protesters are found guilty, it will be a dangerous precedent for people's First Amendment right. The San Francisco District Attorney's Office did not respond to a request for comment. For KPFA News, I'm Yun Chen.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt and Eun Chan. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.